Hello, listeners. Welcome to Business IQ Radio. We're happy to be with you today here on 105.1 WBNH. I'm one of your hosts, only one, Don Byrne, and I'm here with my friend and colleague of many years, Andrea O'Brien of the Small Business Development Center here in Manchester. Hello, Andrea.
Hello, Don. And it's true, we are here today to do what I think is going to be a very interesting show.
Yeah, I mean, when you talked to me about this, I wasn't quite sure to understand, because I think this is somebody who has a lot of expertise in prototyping or initial production of products, but you indicate that there's a lot more to this, so I'm curious to see how this develops.
Well, I originally heard him speak at a meetup in Nashua, and it was on commercialization of new products and the stages that are required to really get, you know, from invention to marketplace. And the presentation he gave, I learned so much, and it really changed the way I thought about how I would help clients trying to bring new products to the market. So I felt that Steve Owens from
Finish Line, right?
Yeah, Finish Line Product Development Services from in Hudson would be an excellent guest, and that's who we have for on our show today to talk about commercialization and product development and what entrepreneurs should be thinking about and how they should be thinking about the process of bringing their idea to market.
Well, it's certainly one of the requirements that every entrepreneur has, is to try to figure out how to take that vision in their head and turn it into something tangible. So it'll be interesting to see what Steve has to say. But let me ask you another question very quickly, because I know we want to get to our guest. He is actually outside here. You mentioned meetups. I've heard about these. I guess these are different groupings of people that have common interests. Is that the is that the idea behind it?
You know, usually it's on a theme. So there are, this particular meetup was, I think, run by the Nashua Hub, which is an entrepreneurial, you know,
it's an incubator or something.
Incubator, yeah. Environment, ecosystem, all that. Yeah. And I've been to a couple presentations there. So people should Google, you know, meetup business or meetup Nashua Hub and join.
But it's other things too, right? I mean, I think where I've seen them for people who have also hobby interests, like you want to go hiking that want to go do other kinds. So this, I guess, is a bit of a rage. It's a way of people coming together with common interests.
It's so wonderful, because how would you ever find, you know, if you have, I do meetups for hiking, and lots of times I can't find someone to hike with, but if there's a meetup, all of a sudden I'm hiking with 15 other people, and it's very, you know, comfortable and fun. You know, you have shared experience. It's really, so yeah, meetups are great. So that's how I came to know Steve Owens, our guest. And, you know, anytime we can bring kind of a technical topic to the business community, happy to do it. And that's what we have for everyone today.
Yeah, well, this sounds interesting, and I hope I get to ask him a couple of questions I have in mind, which is, you know, is this only for entrepreneurs, or is it something that can be used by run rate companies and some things like this? But it, you know, the more you talk to me, my head is filling up with some questions. So maybe what we'll do is I just ask you, is there anything new and interesting you want to mention for the people at the SBDC or what you're doing?
Yeah, you know, what I would like to do is just put out there that there's an SBIR in the spirit of commercialization, SBIR, Small Business Innovative Research, and STTR. And that's a grant program that the government offers to have entrepreneurs develop their ideas for commercialization for the government. So it's often the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense. Anyway, in December, in early December, there are three info sessions happening on December 5th at UNH in Durham, on December 6th at UNH in Manchester, and December 7th at the UNH Law School in Concord. So any one of those people, if they have new products that might be eligible for a grant, they should look at this.
And if they, if they're driving and they can't write this down, can they go to the SBDC website and find more information, or contacts and then email?
Yes, they should contact the BDC.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Through the contact, that's just on your website.
Right.
Well, why don't we just take that opportunity and let's get Steve in here and talk about things. Again, you're listening to 105.1 WBNH, and I'll turn it over to you to speak to our guest.
Steve, thank you so much for coming on Business IQ Radio with us today. And like we do with many of our guests, we'd like to find out more about them and their background. So could you take a few minutes and tell us about who you are and how you got to be the leader of Finish Line Product Development Services?
Sure. Thank you, Andrea, for having me. Really appreciate it. It's great to be here. A little bit about myself. I've always been an engineer and always been an entrepreneur for as long as I could remember. Started lots of little small job things even when I was in grade school and high school. Eventually got my engineering degree, went to work for a big company, got bored pretty quickly. So I decided to start my own company. Did that for about 10 years and then ended up selling it to a much larger organization. Then, of course, got bored working for the big company, started one again. I've done that three or four times. Each time I did it, what I realized about myself was I really love the product development part of the thing, and that was the early phase of the project, and I got bored very quickly when it became a larger organization, when it was much more about the operations and that sort of thing. So Finish Line was an effort to start a company that I would never sell, that it would be my passion. It would be doing something that I really love doing every day. I would wake up and really enjoy going to the office and doing the one thing that, you know, I really have a passion for and really love doing.
So you must see all kinds of, as a product developer, you must see all kinds of crazy ideas. And probably most of them you can't talk about because there's probably non-disclosure agreements and all sorts of paperwork. But you know what? That might be a good place to launch this discussion on commercializing a product. First thing an entrepreneur might want to think about is protecting their idea. Can you tell us a little bit about how you have seen that happen?
Or not seen it happen, may be.
Right.
You know, I would say that it's not the first thing you should think about. The patent laws have changed quite a bit. 20 years ago, you could get a patent on a lot of things. It's much more difficult to get significant patents. You got to be careful there because any patent lawyer can write you a patent on anything, but that doesn't mean it's valuable. Just because you have a patent doesn't mean that it's really going to protect people or protect you from other people getting into your space. Even when you have a good patent, it is only one of many things that creates a fence around your business. Things could be more important is being really good at serving your customers, having that operational edge. Companies that I know that have totally relied on patents, what happens is the patent eventually fails. They're not very good. The competition comes in and they get creamed. But in today's world, patents are really a tertiary way of protecting your space, if you would. And I would say it's probably not even the most important way to do it. The most important way is to be really good at what you do. Let's face it, Apple, it does have a lot of patents. It even sued Samsung over a patent. They spent millions and millions of
dollars. And Microsoft.
And Microsoft, right. And millions of dollars on it. And one, most companies don't have that kind of cash to spend on lawyers. And number two, what was the result of that? Basically nothing. The lawyers got rich, and Samsung and Microsoft still make phones. So does Apple. But you know what? People still line up at the Apple Store. They line up at the Apple Store because it's a great experience with a great product.
Yeah.
And in my mind, focus on that. That's where your attention needs to be, not on some kind of legal trick.
So just to follow that up, because I see entrepreneurs come in and they have an idea and they are so concerned about the protection of the idea, they can't even, they're afraid to go talk to anybody about it. And I said, well, that's not going to help you. How is an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, something that you have regularly seen when you first start talking to somebody about furthering their product development?
You know, look, first thing I got to say is I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving legal advice here. Okay. So I got to put the disclosure in there. But yes, there's if people won't sign NDAs, then okay, fine. Don't talk to them. But that's largely so that you don't technically lose certain patent rights. If you trust the people, talk to them. Okay. They're going to help you. If you can't talk about your idea, if you can't really have a bunch of people understand what you're trying to do, you're not going to be successful by yourself. It takes a team to really build a great company. It's not an individual thing.
Yeah.
So if you can't talk to people, and you know what? If you don't trust them, trust them. Even if they do sign an NDA, don't talk to them anyway. Okay. Most of the people that you're going to talk to are not going to steal your idea, though. Mm. That's even when you talk to competitors. I mean, I don't want to get into specifics, but we just showed a very, very novel idea that was created by one individual who's now a corporation to two very, very large corporations. And they came and saw it and demoed it and told them how it worked. And you know what the chances of them stealing that idea are? Zero. They are absolutely zero. They're not going to do it. They have too many of their own ideas to go out and try to work on somebody else's idea, right?
Right.
Now, if this guy eventually turns us into a revenue, profitable producing business, they will absolutely buy that business because they need that, right? Mm-hmm. That's why they came and saw it. They want to be one of the people who at least will have an opportunity to bid on that company once it has customers and revenue. But they have too many of their own things to do to go out and steal somebody else's idea. And believe me, no matter how good you think the idea is, unless you can execute on that idea, it is really not worth anything.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I have innumerable friends in Silicon Valley who tell stories about people who look to figure out what is number 11 through 15 on Cisco or Microsoft's list of to-do projects, build them because they don't have time. They're focused on the top 10. And then you sell the company off and you make a lot of money.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that happens all the time. It also sounds like you're a devotee of Dr. Deming when you have a big emphasis on customers will tell you what you need to do and customer satisfaction is the key. And certainly the whole quality revolution that pulled Japan up and out of its out of the ashes of the World War. And it sounds like you're really echoing a lot of those comments.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're building a company. Right. It may be based on an idea. All companies are based on an idea, but you're building a company and companies serve customers. Right. And they don't serve them by just creating an idea. They serve them by providing a product or a service that meets their needs and does it much more efficiently than other people can. And, you know, Deming and a lot of other people, I mean, you can just read HBR, whatever book, you know, a magazine every week. It is hard to be in business. And you have to be really, really good, regardless of the idea, right? If you can't do that, don't even attempt it, right?
Wow. Sounds like good advice.
So I'm interested a little bit in terms of, have you seen a shift in the kinds of businesses that are coming to you? We certainly here in the Manchester area are aware of Dean Kamen's impact, and we're looking at areas of robotics. We're looking at biochemical advances, things like this. And I'm just wondering, I mean, traditionally New Hampshire was other kinds of businesses, and it took a little bit of while for, and we really never had, except with companies like Digital and some of the others that were here, the mini computer revolution come. So, you know, what sort of the landscape? What kind of businesses are you seeing? Are there new industries coming up?
There are, and you know, there is some regionality to types of businesses. Silicon Valley is largely in the consumer space. Most of the startups there, and in fact, if you go there, they only talk about consumer companies. B2B companies are almost not companies to them, right? In New England, including New Hampshire, that's very different. It's much more about B2B companies. So in the New England area, largely doesn't see a lot of consumer companies. And even when they do, it's largely a niche market company. But they see a tremendous amount of B2B companies, which are almost invisible to the rest of the world because, you know, it's hard to even explain what they do, but yet they generate billions of dollars in revenue, right?
Are we talking products like businesses making products for other businesses to use?
Okay. Correct.
So,
I mean,
equipment.
The the robots that are running Amazon's warehouses, okay? These are dark warehouses. They didn't even install lights when they put them in there because the robots don't need to see. So you go into these buildings and all you see are LEDs flashing. Those are all the robots running around picking the stuff off the shelves and bringing it. That technology was largely done in New England. Okay, now everybody's heard of Amazon. Few people understand the way that they're able to create these operational efficiencies through automation. That's one of the industries that's big and up and coming. Robots will rule the world. It's becoming more and more a thing.
Yeah, Andrea always gives me the bad look. She knows what I'm going to say now.
Uh-oh.
I'm a fan of drones.
Don't.
Drones.
So drones, no. Drones are going everywhere, right? There's some estimates saying that drones could add up to $500 million over a 10-year period of time to the economy of New England, and New Hampshire will benefit from that.
I wouldn't. Look, like any industry that has hype, there are things that are just silly, at least by today's standards. You know, is Amazon going to be delivering packages with drones? I doubt it, right? And even though you can make a video of a drone carrying an empty box, it can't carry a full box. It doesn't have the lifting capacity and the endurance and et cetera, et cetera. But you're absolutely right. Drones are used in a lot of other ways. Remote sensing is a very important drone.
Fighting. Yeah, using, you know, for inspection. I mean, I was just reading an article about inspection of waterways in New York City, where the safety issue alone, not having to dress people up and put them down in a really biologically bad environment in the sewage systems.
Correct, right.
Tracking to see if there are cracks or leaks, and just, you know, amazing what can in fact be done.
Oh, absolutely. And it saves people from going to dangerous places, doing, you know, meticulous, needless jobs, right? It's freeing up society to really do much higher level type of work, right? Yeah. And so drones and automation is really going to improve society and people in general, right? Because it's really going to free up the human mind to create even bigger and better things, right?
Right. And as we all live longer in age, the medical technologies that fall out of robotics in terms of operations, and then even moving on to a little bit more to the science fiction kinds of things, but, you know, new drugs that are breakthroughs and rapid prototyping and testing of those things and like that.
So. Now you bring up rapid prototyping. I'm curious to know if a business has a product idea, how long should they be working on their thing before they are willing to put it out into the market?
As short as possible, okay? And this is the lean revolution. There was a book written a while back called The Lean Startup, and it was sort of based roughly on the lean manufacturing techniques. And what it did is it created this shift for entrepreneurs. It used to be that the expectation as an entrepreneur was he knew exactly what the market wanted, and all you had to do out is go spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to build the factory and to make the prototypes and get in production of that thing, and you would be a billionaire. But what we've learned over the years is that the entrepreneur may have an inkling of what the person or the customers want, but it's probably at least incomplete, if not, in fact, wrong. And that the real focus of entrepreneurship should be, how do I discover a repeatable business model that can make a profit? And the idea that you're going to spend a huge amount of money to get into production with something that has not been validated, and by validation I mean you haven't proven that you can make money with this idea yet, is going away very rapidly, if not already gone. And we're moving to this idea of, well, what process do I take to make sure that my idea will, in fact, create that business that will have a repeatable profitability, right? And we move to what we call the MVP, the minimally viable product. You know, you say prototype. The first prototype might be a rendering, might be a photorealistic picture that you're going to do nothing but go and test market with a certain focus group. That might be your first prototype, and that might take you one day.
Right. What do you mean? You take the picture to them and say,
sure.
What do you think about this?
A little more structured than that, but something like that.
Yeah.
You may say, hey, would you like to buy this, right? A very common market validation strategy is to create a website, has the photorealistic rendering on it. You buy some Facebook ads. You drive people to that website. Do they push the buy now button?
Wow.
If they don't push that buy now button, something's wrong with either your messaging or your product.
Oh, that's interesting.
You've seen this before. I mean, in the fashion industry, a lot of times, don't they do just an initial design and a rendering? And then they put that out, and that's how they're promoting it. Or they may make one copy that you get Heidi Klum to wear, which I would buy anything she was. and then that's you determine if there's a mass market. I mean,
correct,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think about Keurig.
Yeah.
And what it first looked like when it came out and the features it had. And, yeah. I mean, you know, and it, I don't know how long it took to take off, but the Keurig of then is completely
different
than the Keurig of now. And I
would say that on average, and I'm just going from memory now, that there is at least 25 MVPs made before they make the pre-production prototype. Right, so that you're changing the product at least 25 times before the first time you're really going to sell it, right?
Wow.
You're really going to have a you give me money for it type of thing. And sometimes those are called pivots. So when you take an MVP out there and you learn a bunch, you go pivot the product idea to this new idea. Next MVP, you keep repeating that process over and over again. Until you say, you know what, I now have a system, a whole product, marketing, sales, operations, right, system that will create value for a customer greater than its cost, right? Because ultimately, if you can't do that, you will not survive.
No. Right? Well, you're listening to WBNH Business IQ Radio on 105.1 Bedford Community Radio. And our guest today is Steve Owens, of Finish Line Product Development Services. And we're talking about product development, and I don't want to say prototyping because we've just heard it's, you know, that takes
Well, is there a difference, Steve?
There is. An MVP is something that you never intend to go into production with. Okay. The idea is it's used to learn. It's a product that you've made so you can learn more about what your customers need. A prototype is often what we call a pre-production prototype, is the thing that ultimately you're going to make a million of. And it's a very different thing than an MVP. We may go to Best Buy and buy four products, take them all apart, take the things out of them, and recombine it to make this MVP. Now, you could never afford to go into production with that. But the MVP, the assumption is, all I need is two so I can go show them to the two customers and see if they'll buy it. So with that, until you know they are going to buy it, why spend a whole pile of money designing a bunch of stuff that you don't know anybody will buy yet?
That makes so much sense. Yeah. You know, we've had a couple people come into our office with the invention. And as an advisor, like, I don't know if that product is out there or not. I'm taking the guy's word for it that there's nothing like it anywhere on the shelf. You know, and so what, you know, what do you recommend for, I mean, does there have to be an exhaustive search if the person coming into your office is making a claim there's nothing like it, or is that a material, is that an important claim to make, or?
If somebody made that claim to me, I'd say the reason there's probably nothing like it is because nobody will buy it.
Okay.
And needs are being met some way, shape,
some,
or form.
Some other way. That's right. It's extremely rare in today's world. I mean, look, someday somebody's going to invent cold fusion, okay? And that will be nothing like it before, okay? But 99.999% of products are, they're not really inventions per se. They are different adaptations of technology for a different need, okay? Most of the things that we work with are not inventions. We're just combining technologies that already exist in a certain way so it solves a certain problem for a customer that's better than any other way he's going to solve that problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, getting back to your question, what do you say to that person? Well, what I would say is, well, what problem are you solving? And if that person has that problem now, what? how are they solving it, right? There's very few human problems that are not solvable. Yes, we don't have a cure for cancer. We don't have cold fusion. But most people are not showing up at my office or probably your office with those kinds of discoveries, right?
Right.
It's more likely an app or an IoT device that's being targeted at a specific thing, right? And a specific problem that somebody might be solving in a different way, and that way costs $10 and his way costs $5, right? Mm-hmm. So there's value there.
Or just to spin that the other way.
Yeah.
Just the Yeti. Keeping, you know, I can go and get a Coleman cooler for $15, or I could spend $250 and keep my food.
The money that you pay for a Rolex watch keeps as good a time as the $5 Casio that you pick up in Walmart.
Right. Yeah.
All right. It's interesting. If you look at the evolution of watches, they went from jewelry to a business tool back to jewelry.
Correct.
That's what's happened. So, yeah. Steve, I'm kind of interested. There are other aspects. I mean, what I understand what you're saying. The entrepreneur comes in and they have a sense and a passion about their product, and they have a vision in terms of this is what the world needs. But getting it done, all the other skill sets, you know, what are manufacturing costs? How do I put together a team? All of the other elements that go into building a company. What are you seeing in terms of the people coming in? And is this some of the coaching that people like you and others are out doing? Do you see that as part of your role?
We do, because, you know, we have to make our customers successful, right? That is our mission, right? If we can't make them successful, we won't make any money, just as any company out there. And part of that is making sure that they make the right kinds of decisions about, you know, how to raise money, who they get as partners, when they hire people. You know,
how do you spell sales distribution or marketing, right?
Correct.
Because they're engineering people and they don't necessarily correct. Have ever gotten exposed. What is double entry bookkeeping?
Correct. That's a little later, but in the beginning, it's mostly about spending the money and not so much about keeping track of it. But yeah, those are all, you know, really important things to, and you know, and as you're alluding to, it does take a team to be successful at business, regardless if it's product-based or service-based or old idea or new idea, right? And I think it was the book Good to Great, right, that talked about, hey, the first job is to get the right people on the bus, right? And I got to tell you, most people that we run into, they seem to think that they're going to find the cheapest people to get on the bus, not the best people to get on the bus, right? But really, if you think about it, nobody created a great business with the least expensive people to get on the bus, right? They created a great business because they attracted really, really talented, energetic, visionary people who were really good at what they did, right? And so the first step is to get that team to be an excellent team, right? Not a team of convenience, not a team of this is all I can afford, but a team of really, really talented, excellent people. If you can do that one thing, your chances of success go way, way, way up. Luck always plays a part, but I'm telling you, if there was one thing you could do as a founder, it would be stop focusing on the idea and, you know, anything else actually, and focus on who do I need on this bus? What are the key pieces that I need to fill, right? And who are the best people I can get in the world at that? And how do I convince them to join my team and not somebody else's team, right? That really is your job as an entrepreneur. If you can do that, and then you can focus on making sure that team is functional, they all work together as a team as opposed to working differently, which is a whole nother discussion,
right?
Almost guarantee you'll be successful, right? Regardless of the idea.
Well, this is why I like what you said before about don't be afraid to talk to people about your idea, because my impression is one of the parts of New Hampshire business underappreciated is we have a good network of people here, and there are people you can turn to, and they're willing to help. So finding advisors to get started, making sure you put together some people like that who can then lead you and guide you, and they have the experience and credibility, And I'm guessing that's what you see as one of the ingredients of success.
Oh, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. New Hampshire is a great place to be an entrepreneur. I mean, and you know, there are lots and lots and lots of people that will help you, right? Don't assume that they won't help you. And you're also right about the idea. If you won't tell them what you're trying to do, if you can't communicate with them, you can't get them excited about your vision, they don't know how to help you, right? They don't have a choice now because they can't really help you because they don't know what you're trying to do.
So, and you will likely learn more from the tough questions they ask you that will improve what you're doing than anything else you could do.
The best partners, you're not sure if you hate them or love them. Those are the best partners. If you always love them or always hate them, they're probably not very good partners. But if they're right in the middle and you wake up one day and you hate them and the next day and you love them, that's probably a guy that's doing you some good.
Hmm. Yeah, that's why when we talk to people about, don't be afraid to throw your hat into these different contests that are out there. Oh. Put yourself out in the public. I mean, I think you have the, you were telling me about the pitch camp that SBDC runs and things like that.
We have a pitch clinic where entrepreneurs looking that have an idea that are looking to sell that idea, not to sell it, but to promote it to investors. And we always tell them, well, we've been told by venture capitalists and angels, the most important thing they look at is the team. Before the product, before the problem and the solution, they look at who's on the team. And so that was...
You're absolutely right. In fact, I still remember reading, and I won't mention who it is, but it was one of the well-known venture capital companies in the Boston area. And the guy actually wrote an entire blog on how many great companies he said no to. And his conclusion was that he was not capable of determining whether an idea was a good one or a bad one. And that is exactly the point you were making. He went away from trying to do that and went to, can this team execute? Because if they can execute, even if it's a bad idea, they still make money, just not as much.
Right.
And whether it's a good idea or not is probably more luck, because it's going to pivot 6 times and the market's going to change 20 times. Nobody really has that ability to see those kind of variables changing in a way that they can predict. But great teams react to those things well, and poor teams react to those things poorly. So the great teams will execute their way to greatness, and the poor teams, even with a good idea, can't get it off the ground.
Hmm. So as an I would call you an expert in commercialization, maybe, because you help companies commercialize their product. When a company reaches the point where they would like to talk to an investor, do they bring you along?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes they put us in their pitch decks, bring us along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it also works the opposite. Sometimes investors come to us and say, you know, what do you think about their unit costs? What do you think about their development budget? Is this technology good or not good? So it works on both sides.
Are you seeing people trying to push the limits of technology? I think what I heard you say before was it's really packaging what is standard, and that seems to me to be a safer bet to do that, because your risk profile goes way down if you're not betting on, gee, and we can also get this, and this piece of metal will be able to stand 3 times the pressure of what it was last year or something.
You know, that I commend the people who spend their lives in research, and it can be a very, very, you know, rewarding thing to do, to be the guy that invents cold fusion. It's a poor investment, though, and that's why largely it's done in universities and it's done by very, very large corporations who can afford to make these large bets. Don't recommend that entrepreneurs create inventions, right? If you can't do it with what we call off-the-shelf technology, move to an idea that you can do that, right? And now, you may be surprised, and a lot of times people will call us and say, we don't know if this is possible. Is that possible? Oh, yeah, that's easy. Okay. And sometimes the opposite happens. They say, oh, we can do this. And we go, yeah, no, you can't. Okay. So always get some advice on whether you think it's hard or difficult. But you, as an entrepreneur, it's very difficult to be an entrepreneur and do all of the business type things. On top of that, if you're trying to invent something, you're trying to create an invention, you really have the deck stacked against you. right? It's and in fact, we even have a white paper about the difference between product development and invention, right? And how that can really mess up a company, right? Because it really can. So now the great thing is today, almost anything is possible. That's one of the nice things about being an entrepreneur today. I mean, in the 50s and 60s, you know, doing anything that was in the technology field was incredibly difficult. You needed, you know, tons of money. Today, people are doing startups with relatively modest amounts of money, and they're creating great things because the technology is so much easier to deal with than it was, you know, even 10 years ago, even 20 years ago. Phone apps, software, even in the electronics field, hardware used to scare people off, but, you know, it's relatively easy now.
Well, as you say that, it causes me to think of two things. One is we had a show where we spoke to some people who are doing 3D printing, and the makerspace that are popping up in libraries all across the country. I mean, talk about empowering and teaching people, young, old, middle-aged, how to take a vision from your head and turn it into something substantive with that enabling technology. I mean, it's so incredibly exciting.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's the Star Trek replicator, isn't it?
It is. Getting close.
That's very true.
In the span of your career, you've seen 3D printing coming out of nowhere, probably, and has it transformed, the field of product development, or?
No, I would say it was basically additive. It has transformed some industries, right? For instance, one of our customers they make 3D printers, but they make it specifically for jewelry. And it used to be that it was endlessly expensive and tedious to make a custom piece of jewelry, right?
Right.
Today, they draw it in a CAD system. This thing prints up the 3D mold. They pour the gold. They add the diamond. And voila, you have this thing in a fraction of the time it used to take to have that kind of piece of... So in our world, it has, because we used to machine those. And okay, you could 3D print it in 2 hours. Machining was, you know, well, a person had to do it, wasn't a machine, usually had to wait in line because he had a backlog, so maybe it took you 3 or 4 days, right?
Wow.
So it's speeded up that process, which allows you to try things quicker, right? Because now you don't hesitate and study it. You just go, let's just go 3D print it, and then you put it together and go, oh, no, that's not going to work. We got to do it different than that, right?
Okay, so this is so interesting. So I lost a gold earring, a really ornate or gold earring. I'm thinking, if I could just give the other one to your client, then maybe they could print another one just like it, because I'm thinking it would be hard to replicate.
They can. There's people online, they sell the machines to the people who make the jewelry,
right.
So you wouldn't give it to this person.
No, right.
But if you go online and just type in custom jewelry, they're all over the place.
Okay.
And you can absolutely send them a picture of it, or you can send them the actual device itself. They could scan that with a laser scanner, and they can feed that scan directly into the 3D printer, and they'll make one exactly like it, and off you go.
Solved that problem, didn't you?
It was 30 years ago that I lost it, I've held on to it all this time.
Technology finally caught up with it.
That's right.
So, Steve, a few times you've mentioned IoT, Internet of Things.
Right.
Are you seeing interesting things happening? I mean, I'm a little bit involved in that, so that's why I'm really curious.
Okay.
I'm involved in an initiative through the Telephone Industry Association on edge data centers, which are trying to empower the knowledge. And we're now talking about we can't tolerate latencies of less than 1 or 2 milliseconds to make decisions. So I'm down in that sort of digging around in that area these days. But what are you seeing in the IoT world?
A ton of stuff. I mean, absolutely a ton of stuff. We've worked on projects where there's something out in the field and you don't know what the status of it is. So you either have to guess, you know, for example, fuel oil, propane, that's at your house. It used to be that they would just show up every week and fill it, or they put you on what's called the degree day system, which was kind of an educated guess. Today, they'll throw a little wireless device on there. They measure it. So what does that do? It means they go less often to fill those tanks. And those trucks are not inexpensive to run, right? It costs money to run those trucks. Every time they're on the road, there's always a potential environmental hazard. They're producing CO2. They're using diesel. They're costing money, which costs, you know, they got to add that to the fuel oil and the propane. So that costs more money to heat your house. So just that little simple device that you probably couldn't do 10 years ago for cost effectively, because sure, every propane guy would like to know exactly what's in every tank. But if it costs several hundred dollars a month to do that, it's not worth it. You're not saving enough, right? But with today's technology, it's so cheap to make something like that. Now they only go when they absolutely need to go. So they go less often. That saves a lot of money. There's all kinds of environmental sensors now that are being used to manage, you know, the heat that comes off and goes into streams that can be detrimental to fish, especially trout here in New England. Where is the phosphorus coming from? Where is that runoff coming from? That's a huge thing, right? Flooding is another huge issue, especially down in places like Houston, where the Army Corps of, it's so flat there. The Army Corps of Engineers would put a dam here to prevent this neighborhood from flooding, and then next flood it would be this neighborhood over here. Unintended consequences that are hard to understand. Now they can put sensors everywhere and understand what these flow rates are. There's IoT devices now that can predict when a machine is going to fail. So instead of, waiting for it to fail, it can actually tell you, hey, I'm going to fail a week from now, right? And so you go and replace that before it fails, and that can, in a lot of cases, that can be saving a lot of money, or if it's a traffic light, it would save, a lot of traffic that happened because now the light is blinking instead of, cycling the way it should. So the IoT space is, I could go on and on and on and on and on, but the world as we know it is quickly being measured at every little minute level. And like you say, now the challenge is, well, I have all this data. How do I manage it? I can't have a person look at it, right? And that's where AI is starting to help. So artificial intelligence is coming in, looking at these big data sets and trying to make all kinds of judgments about things and what's important, what can we ignore, et cetera, et cetera. Big data, that's right. Data and IoT.
We had a great show on big data.
We did a show on big data and how it impacts our lives, that all the data they collect on everybody is being...
Well, and you've opened the door here to something. We've cracked the door, so we have to work through it a little bit. Privacy. Yeah. What's happening to privacy? Because as all of this is happening, people driving past my house and detecting all my sensors and people worrying about, now I have to worry about, do I have the ability to put my credit cards in a wallet that someone isn't going to brush up against me and read my ID and be able to steal my identity?
Right.
So, there's always two sides to the equation.
Oh, absolutely. Every technology, it has pluses and minuses. The one thing they teach you in engineering school is there is no perfect anything. Right. It really is. Well, we have these pluses on this side.
Except for Andrea, maybe.
except for her.
Right.
Of course, one exception.
And every other woman in your life,
that's
my
right.
dad.
All the women in my life.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But there is no perfect anything. Everything is a trade-off. Everything has negatives and everything has positives. Sometimes those are anticipated and you understand them. Sometimes they're not, right? We don't really understand what the consequences are going to be until the thing actually gets here and we have to deal with it. I've always argued, though, that the world has been much better off. Not that there aren't issues that we have to solve, right? But, that's why we're here, right? We're here to solve those issues. But people live longer now. People have better quality food today. People have better medical care today. The housing is better today. Entertainment is better. Art is better. Virtually everything in our world today is better now than it was, 100 years ago.
I have Game of Thrones in my life.
There you go. See?
Couldn't get much better. By the way, you're listening to Business IQ Radio here on 105.1 WBNH. And our guest today is a very engaging and knowledgeable entrepreneur from the area. Steve Owen, who is with, is it Finish Line?
Yes,
the name of your
Finish Line
Product Development. And is really engaging us in a really interesting, wide-ranging conversation.
Well, I first met Steve. He was giving a talk at the Nashua Incubator Space. I think it's called the Nashua Hub. And it was
and now he's moved up to Bedford, so he's moving up.
Right.
He's moving up the food chain.
What was great is that he brought his expertise, to this you know, whoever wanted to show up, they held a, I think it was a meetup maybe, and he presented it. And what I really found just eye-opening is that if you are developing a product for market, you don't necessarily wait until it's perfect. You roll out the first version, and then you start working on, you know, product 2.0. And what it did is it took the fear away, I think, from having to know that it has to be perfect to be offered. It doesn't Correct. Have to be perfect. It just has to be, as you put it, MVP,
minimally viable product, right?
That's right.
Your mission in the beginning is to learn what the perfect product is. If you don't know what the perfect product is, how can you make it? And believe me, whatever you have in your mind is probably only an approximation of the perfect product, right? And it may be perfect to you, but it's got to be perfect to enough people that you can sell it for a price and enough of them to make a profit, right? And if you don't put something in front of people, you're really not going to understand what that perfect product is.
So, now, do you whisper this into the ears of people that you are, you know, helping? Because I know you've got a strong engineering background.
I usually shout, but right. Maybe I should whisper. That might work better.
No, but because you probably have to repeat this over and over to people that are developing new products.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know what I'm saying about the whole lean startup and MVP, you know, they're teaching this, right? You can actually go to school now for entrepreneurship, right? And years ago, we were misfits, right? There wasn't even a course you could take business courses.
Somebody told me it was a French word. It meant the money's all gone.
That's right. That's right. Today, they teach it. But people still, you know, everybody's got to help everybody, right? Nobody has a perfect answer to anything. It's back to that team thing, right? Mm-hmm. Teams will always mm-hmm. outperform everybody else. But a lot of people do show up, and they have what you're talking about. They have this vision of this perfect product, and they're not going to show it to anybody until it is perfect. It's almost like an embarrassment that they're right. And what I tell them is, you know, especially as the CEO, especially as the founder, your job is to be out of the office talking to as many people as you can possibly talk to. You cannot become internally focused, right? You need to go show things to potential customers, investors, whoever it is. If you're not doing that every day, if you're not getting out there and talking to people every day, you're not doing your job as the CEO, right? Some of your team has got to focus internally. I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons I started Finish Line, is so people would have an opportunity to do that, right? They could focus externally and have other people that would help them with these internal things. Mm-hmm. Yes, some people have to do that, right? But that shouldn't be the person whose job it is to create the vision for the product, right? They need to learn from the environment that's out there, right? Who are the decision makers for your product? Who are the influencers? How is your product used, right? How is your product misused, right? These kind of almost seemingly imperceptible details, right,
mm-hmm.
are super important. And I love to tell the story of the iPod, right? You think about Apple and where it was when they kind of jokingly said, well, we're almost dead anyway, so let's bring Steve Jobs back, right, and see what he can do, right? What the hell? We got nothing else to try. We're going to be out of business.
We lost the Pepsi challenge.
That's right. We lost the Pepsi challenge. And we're going to be out of business in a couple of months, so let's just see what he's got to say. And what did he do? He came out with the iPod, right? Now, did he invent the idea of the iPod? No, that actually, I researched it. 1979 was the first patent for an iPod-type device. Okay, 1979, right? And there were already multiple players in the marketplace. But what was the difference? Steve Jobs understood what was wrong with all of them. It was too difficult to get the songs onto the iPod, right? It was just only nerds like me could figure it out, right? And he created iTunes, which was, see a song, push it, it's on your iPod. And it saved Apple. And very quickly, Apple became the most profitable business in the world, right? Very quickly. Why did he do that? Because he was out there talking to people and understood this little tiny subtlety. Everybody else was internally focused on how many songs can I store and how fast do they play and all these technical things, right? And not that Steve Jobs didn't have people who did the technical things. He did, right? But he understood that those requirements, right, the conceptual design of the product, right, that vision, that last little detail was super, super important because he was out talking to people about it, right? Mm-hmm. And your job as an entrepreneur is to do that. Get out there and talk to these people and learn what is important.
Boy, I think you've really hit it right on the head there. Because what I always tell people is, clients and customers, consumers will tell you what they want, and they'll tell you what they want today. But the entrepreneur has to have the vision of how do I take and build on that, and how do I go beyond that? Because customers and clients will never Correct. Tell you what they need tomorrow. They'll only tell you what you need today.
Correct.
You have to take and interpret that. And getting out there, that's the X factor. That's the passion.
Correct.
That's the person who has the feeling, the fire in their belly. And that's, you know, absolutely something that we can convey to an audience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, and you're right. You know, nobody was successful just because they went out and asked a customer, what do you want, and then provided it, right? In fact, a lot of customers don't even tell you what the problem is. They tell you what they think the solution is,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And another famous Steve Jobs comment, which is kind of misinterpreted, you know, he said, customers don't know what they want until I tell them, right? And what he really meant was, I understand their problem. It's my job to figure out how to solve that problem, mm-hmm, right? They may tell me their problem as a solution. Oh, here's what I want, because they think they got to explain it in terms of a solution. But my job is to dig deeper behind that and say, well, why are they suggesting this solution, right? What is the problem, the basic fundamental problem behind that proposed solution? And what's the best way to solve that problem? And that is the essence of good product development, good engineering.
You're listening to 105.1 WBNH Bedford Community Radio, and our guest today is Steve Owens of Finish Line Product Development Services. And we're talking about product development, commercialization, prototyping, and entrepreneurship. And I wanted to ask you, Steve, I'm thinking about a trade show. Do you have any trade shows that you love to go to?
I like to go to any trade show where there are lots of small companies. I love small entrepreneurial companies. And there are actually a lot of different industries. It's one of the great things about New England: medical devices, IoT, automation, industrial controls. And so there are a lot of those trade shows that you can go to where a guy's sharing a space with another guy because he can't afford a full booth, right? And sometimes those are unbelievable conversations, right, where you can go and just see the two-man, three-man company and what they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, I've lived in a lot of locations in my life. I was an Army brat, so we moved around everywhere. And I've traveled all over the world. And, you know, the one thing about New England is that, right? There are just a ton of small, scrappy companies that are trying to make a difference in the world. And, you know, in some small little area, they're, you know, and it's, and again, going back to that Silicon Valley, right? All those companies, they're going to come up with some kind of consumer product, which is fine. Okay. I don't want to say it's the wrong kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to be more based on a fashion appeal, you know, coolness factor,
a
right?
A trend.
Yeah. What's hot,
yeah,
right? What will, you know, I mean, to me, you should pay less for the blue jeans with the holes in them, not
yeah,
more, right?
Right?
And I still don't understand that one.
Right, right. So you enjoy rubbing elbows with those kind, you know, entrepreneurs, small, but big ideas maybe. Could you recommend to our audience maybe, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but
mm-hmm,
an inventor, where could they go to kind of get some camaraderie-ship or, you know, maybe go to a trade show or
sure,
meetup
or meetup, as you said.
Yeah, yeah, meetups would probably be better for that. You know, when you say trade show, that's usually you've paid some money and
right,
customers are coming in and you're trying to sell them something,
right,
or you might be trying to do market validation.
Or maybe just attend and the ticket price. You
yeah,
know, it's,
going to attend is not a bad thing. Boston has a lot of meetup events. There's ENET, the Entrepreneurs Network. That's a good event.
Is that in Boston?
Yeah, they have a couple different places. I know... When I usually go, it's in Waltham, but I think they also meet in Cambridge. There's the Nashua Hub that's in, I think you mentioned them before. That's a great place. They have a lot of meetup events. I mean, Google is a wonderful thing. You can you can Google entrepreneurship and meetup. You can go to the meetup app site and just put in your criteria. It'll tell you of the places that you can go. So there's no lack of you could go to an event every night, right? I didn't bring the list of them, but I know I'm not mentioning, you know, at least 10 others that meet on a monthly basis where there's other entrepreneurs. They have speakers. They cover different topics.
A good place to network.
And
maybe find another team member.
Right. LinkedIn is good. That's not a meetup event, but you can find great team members on LinkedIn. There's got excellent searching features. There's another app out there called Co-Founders. Another place where people are exchanging information, exchanging advice. LinkedIn has all kinds of entrepreneurial groups. And in today's world, there's really no excuse for an entrepreneur not to be educated, right?
Right.
There's just so many sources of that.
Right.
In fact, if anything, there's too many, right?
It's an overload sometimes, right?
And you can always go to the SBDC and get some training online.
Well, you know what we tell startups, I mean, because we don't want to overwhelm anybody, but live free and start.
Hey, there you go.
Are you familiar with Live Free and Start?
I have heard that before. I can't remember where I've heard it, but I like that.
It's a website which is supposed to kind of introduce the entrepreneur to, you know, who are the angels, what are the first steps, other resources. You know, they concierge you through
the whole process.
Through the process and help you with developing that network. And so that's one of our recommendations that but there are also business contests. I mean, there's lots of business contests. And through those, you meet all, I mean, it's an amazing amount of very smart individuals that you'll find in the room. And
in fact, don't worry about winning the contest. Worry about being there with other entrepreneurs
and
talking to them.
You know, you don't have to, software development. Now, do you do anything with that?
We do. We do both software and hardware. So it's many products today are only software, right? That probably more products are
so
only
app
software.
Development.
Do app development? We do a lot of cloud software, you know, for IoT type devices. We write a lot of embedded code, which is the code that goes into you know, a machine that might control something. Software is
used
really
to be called firmware.
Used to be called firmware. Yeah, some people still call it firmware.
How did you know that, Don?
Show your age. Because I'm old. That's why I've been in the computer business 30 years.
That's right.
So we're coming towards the end of the show. This has gone like lightning. We always like to ask our guests, what is your vision of the future? Where will you be in the next few years? And where do you see things happening in New Hampshire in the business community in the next few years?
You know, my view of the future is that people are going to have more time to do, you know, what I call truly human things, right? These are the creative things. We are finally moving to a point where we're getting rid of the mundane, right? People don't have to spend their entire lives on an assembly line just, you know, putting the hubcap on the car, right? They can truly spend time devoted to other passions, okay? That doesn't necessarily mean leisure. It can also mean other business ideas. But, you know, I think we're really sort of right at the dawn of a time where if you want to study quantum physics for 30 years, you can actually do that. You know, there was a time not too long ago where if you were going to do something like that, you had to be in that top 1%. You had to be an incredibly wealthy person because most of your time had to be spent meeting your basic needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all this technology, you can go to school online now. You can watch classes at MIT online for free, right? So you can live in Bangladesh and study quantum mechanics at MIT, right? And farms and building houses and making most of the necessities of the world will very quickly be done by robots almost for free.
Wow.
Right. And so whatever your true passion as a human being, right, to live to your, even if that's writing poetry or creating art or writing music, that is probably the current generation's destiny, right? As they are probably the first generation en masse who are going to be capable of doing that kind of thing. And in my mind, that's going to create a much better society, right, where we hopefully wars will be less because people aren't fighting over scarce resources and all this kind of stuff, right, that this will truly, will there be issues of privacy and all these other kinds of things? Yes, there'll be problems that we'll have to solve, right? Mm. But that's my, I think we're right on the cusp of that.
That's incredible. I think that's an incredible
vision.
That's
really well said. Really well said. So since that's so well said, we have to ask you, how do people find you?
You can find us on the web. We're at finishlinepds.com. That stands for Product Development Services. We're in Hudson, New Hampshire. You can also just Google Finish Line Products or Finish Line Product Development, and you'll find us. And on our website, just click the contact button and shoot us an email.
It's been delightful to have you here, and you're quite a good guy. We really like to have you back, talk about some more things.
Absolutely. Love to come back.
This was really very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Thank you for having me.
Well, very good. So on that note, we're running low on time, and you know what that means, Andrea.
I do know what that means.
It means that you are up. So let me say goodbye to all of our listeners. Thank you. Please send your cards and letters in. We always love hearing from you. We like to be exposed to our client base as well. And on that, do you have any advice for entrepreneurs and others, Andrea?
I do. And remember, you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.